literally our only job to keep them off the bench. The only thing we have to do, the only requirement, is practice. That's it. Even though I am very intentional about not projecting that, it still comes up. Something's up, and we're gonna have to, we would be better trying to work that out in practice than trying to do it right now. Slowly going down that emotional ladder with her, she was slowly calming down, but in my mind, I was like, I'm tired as hell. I want to be reinforcing that belief that when you are in a storm, I'm gonna be the safe harbor.
Hey there, I'm Alyssa Blass Campbell. I'm a mom with a master's degree in early childhood education and co-creator of the Collaborative Emotion Processing Method. I'm here to walk alongside you through the messy, vulnerable parts of being humans raising other humans with deep thoughts and actionable tips. Let's dive in together. Welcome to our new limited series, Respectful Parenting in Real Life. I get to hang out with some folks and dive into what this work looks like outside of scrolling through Instagram or that picture-perfect snapshot of respectful parenting. What does it look like when you drop the ball, when it's messy, when we're imperfect humans, or when our kids don't respond perfectly as we planned? Buckle up for some real stories from real humans, and I hope that you get to see glimpses of yourself or your kids in these stories to know that you definitely are not alone in this journey. And there's a village of folks walking right alongside you. All right, let's dive in.
Hey everyone, welcome to our podcast series about this real life respectful parenting, what it looks like outside of that Instagram perfect world and catching you outside of your scroll here. I get to hang out today with Destiny Davis. And first of all, if you're not following her over on Instagram, you need to be, and we'll chat about that in this episode too, because she's remarkable and also makes me laugh. And I like both of those. But Destiny is a mom of two, a 9-year-old and a 4-year-old. And we're going to do just as we've been doing, have a real life conversation about what this work looks like in the messy, raw realness as Destiny's a mom. And, you know, I think so often, especially folks who are doing this work on, like, I'm going to use the quote, the word influencer in quotes, but like on a bigger platform where you're sharing more of this journey. And just the other day, you know what, Destiny, this might hit home for you. I was having a DM conversation with someone over on Instagram, and I said something about like having a hard moment with my kid and just like had to walk away from him and take some breaths and come back. And the whole time he's crying, you know, like it's not like he was like, yeah, mom, sure, I'll be calm while you go take your deep breaths. He was crying the whole time, but I needed that space to regulate so that I could come back and show up with him and be like a steady human for him. And she was like, oh my God, that happens to you? And I was like, yeah, babe, sure does. And I was like struck again by this. I think so often it looks like there's this end goal where we're going to get to a place where we're never dysregulated, where our kids are never dysregulated. And that's not it. So let's dive into this, Jess. How are you today?
I'm doing great. I went to the gym this morning, so I'm already off to a good start of the
day. Good for you. I haven't gone to the gym in years, to be totally real.
It had been a while. It's been a while. I'm just getting back into the swing of it. It's one of those things that helps me be a better parent. So I'm trying to prioritize it.
Yes. Good for you. Good for you. Well, just before we hit record, we were having a conversation and I was like, stop saying what you're saying, because I really want people to hear this. And so I want you to, like, you were sharing this analogy that I think is rad. Can you share it again for us, please?
Yeah. So I think a lot of the issues I see in my community is that people are starting out from this behavioral standpoint and understanding like we need to fix our kids' behavior. And as you move into understanding, you know, we need to allow space for the emotions and the experiences and all of that, the idea of it working feels very heavy. And we start to personalize their behavior because they're like, oh no, my kid was fine before when I was using punitive measures. They were so well behaved and now all this stuff is coming out. And even I have those moments where I'm like, oh God, Is this too much panic? Is this too much emotion? Or we've been practicing this. Why isn't this working now? So I like to encourage my parents with this analogy that I think really reminds us that this is about teamwork. There's a certain level of responsibility that is ours and a certain level of just circumstance. And so the analogy I like to use is that our kids are a player in a game, and we are literally our only job to keep them off the bench. The only thing we have to do, the only requirement is practice. That's it. That's where our scope of responsibility is, because we can't manage what happens when they're at school or with the other parent or any of those things. My job is that regardless of what kind of day we're having, we're still going to practice this, you know, and practice may look different, but are you practicing? That's it. If you're practicing, your child's going to get better. And they're going to be better at some skills than they are at others. But my job is I just got to keep you off the bench. And in order to do that, we just have to practice. And so in those moments where I'm like, ah, is this working? My mind goes, are you practicing? Even if today's practice doesn't necessarily look as good as yesterday's, your requirement is to practice. And in some tantrum moments, our practice looks like we're talking through it and we're breathing through it. In other tantrum moments, that looks like we're doing nothing. And in other tantrum moments, that looks like she's yelling and I get frustrated and then we have to come back and do repair. But we are conscious and intentionally practicing. And that's good enough. That is good enough. It really is. Yeah. That's what they need. They need the practice of it.
Totally. I love that analogy so much because I think it does take the pressure off of that end destination, right? Like yes. If we're always in practice mode, then we're always moving forward. Right? Like we're always, there isn't a space where it's like, okay, we're done practicing now. we're always going to be coming back to practice. That's rad. I just, the other day we were out for like a little sled ride. I'm in Vermont, so it's just cold for, you know, I don't know, 12 months of the year. And a friend came over and we had our babies out on little sleds and we're pulling them. And my little guy was over it. And we were not at home yet. We were on our way back home, but we were not there. And he starts like arching his back in the sled. He's gonna like fall out of the sled into the palace now. And I, in this moment, was like, you know, I like dropped down, I motion coached him for a little bit. And then I was like, we're gonna keep going. We're not gonna live here in this snowy path. Like we're gonna get back to home. And he's gonna have hard feelings on the way there. And it's gonna be okay. Like I had to allow myself, because in those moments I can feel that pressure of, okay, we're in a group setting, like we're all trying to get someplace. I've already stopped us once to like emotion coach him and slow the pack down. And now like, what's this gonna look like? Ultimately, I ended up holding him in my arms and dragging the sled behind me because he was gonna fall out of the sled into the snow through his tantrum. And then we like got back home, and after they had left and it was probably like actually like 2 hours later, he and I were just playing. And I was like, bud, when we were on that sled ride home, you seemed really frustrated. And he squeezed his fist and went, which is what we do for frustrated. And I was like, yeah, you seemed really frustrated that we were still going and you felt all done. And he just kept doing this. And I was like, okay, that's it. Like that for me is the practice. Did he access that in the moment as a 10-month-old? No, not in that moment. You know what I mean? Like in the moment he was body backwards off the sled. But then when we got back to like that regulated state, we could revisit that and he could start to practice. Like, this is what I do when I'm frustrated. And now as we do it more and more, like every once in a while, I see this glimpse of like, he's frustrated and he squeezes his fists and grunts. And I'm like, great. Like we're going to see glimmers of it. And still we're going to have the sled tantrum, you know? And like when you're looking at your kids here at 4 and 9, are there different ways that this shows up for them, both at the different ages, but just in terms of like who they are as humans?
Yeah, heck yeah. So the 4-year-olds, I guess her not issue, but her challenge right now is really just being dysregulated, like a 4-year-old. Just, okay, let's calm it down. It's time to do this. Or just extremely overstimulated. She is the epitome of a 4-year-old. And then the 9-year-old is very much emotional. She's in a very emotional stage right now and gets very frustrated, very angry, sometimes aggressive. And both of them, what you just said, is the way that we practice.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Bree.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Bree, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No-Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
Sometimes I use my tools in the moment to try to move the moment along, and sometimes it does work. Sometimes rationalizing or, you know, regulating breaths and, you know, transitions and redirecting, those kind of discipline tools work in the moment, right? Sometimes they don't. Sometimes the best thing that I can do is regulate myself so that I can be present, because this too shall pass, right? But we both, well, with both of my kids, I come back and do that recap. That's one of the most powerful tools for practice, right? Because you don't practice during the game. You practice, it's about maintenance. And so we always come back, especially at the end of the day. So with the 9-year-old, for instance, yesterday she was having a really hard time for good reason, because we didn't get to spend a lot of time yesterday. She's gone on the weekends. Mondays are always very difficult, and I'm very intentional about reconnecting on Mondays. And we didn't have that yesterday. So I knew that when it was bedtime, the fury was coming. And so I was already prepped and prepared for it. And she had maybe a 10-minute tantrum. And when she finally, she just like bawls and lets it out. And I'm just like, yes, oh God, soften. Like, we've gone from anger to sadness. We're going up the scale. This is great. And so after she eased from that space and we were in a regulated space, we just recapped what happened. And I think that's that integration of, you know, left brain and right brain, that whole brain where we're talking about the experience in a very rational way, black and white. You didn't get to spend time. You got angry. You started yelling at me. You said these things. And you then the emotional piece, like you felt this, and validating those emotions and those feelings and bringing it together and saying, you know, you were angry, you were upset, you felt hurt. And then you got, you know, you got your feelings out, and it wasn't in the most productive way, but mommy was still there to support you. And I was still there to hold you through that. And here we are now, and we're feeling better. We're connecting and, you know, talking through the experience in that way is so powerful, because like you said, even if it's not in the moment, she's still practicing it. She's still practicing being able to say, this is what's happening. This is what I'm feeling. This is what I need. And that's really what integration is. And that's really what regulation in the moment is. So if she's practicing it with me then eventually when, you know, she didn't get what she wanted, we didn't get to connect, she can articulate that as, you know, as she gets older, I'm frustrated because I didn't get to spend time with you. And I need a little bit more time. I know my bedtime's usually 9:30. could I stay up 15 more minutes so we can watch some TikToks or so that we can color or something like that? That's what the, you know, a goal eventually is, but I can't just expect her to practice that when it's really hard. We have to practice outside of the moment so that they can eventually get better at recalling it in the moment.
Yeah, I love it. My dad, I grew up in a basketball household. I have four brothers and we all played, and my dad coached. And my dad is like, he often wears a Hawaiian shirt. He would be like sitting and the calmest dude on the sidelines. And I remember being young and at one point, like observing like a coach, like yelling and screaming during the game, running up down sidelines. And it was just so opposite of my dad. And I asked him about it. And he was like, yeah, I don't have to, most of my coaching happens in practice. Like when we're at the game, these guys know what to do and we'll adjust things and we'll call timeouts and we'll chat, but they know what they're doing because we practice it. And this is just, I was like, my dad is going to love this analogy. I can't wait to have him tune into this one. But yeah, I dig it so, so much. And I think, you know, when we're looking at that, of like, she feels disconnected, right? She doesn't feel like she has had time to connect. And so her nervous system feels disconnected. It makes sense to have the big feelings and the nervous system reaction to that. And then she comes back together to connect with you. And throughout all of that, she knows that you're there for her hard stuff, that you're not just sitting on the sidelines when she's hitting threes, right? Like yeah. You're there when she gets teed up and you're there for her hard stuff. And that's so much more powerful. I mean, even as adults, when we think about like, there are people that show up when there's something to celebrate. And Those aren't the people that I think of as Brené Brown calls them our marble jar folks, like who are the folks who are adding marbles to your jar. And These are people that like, yeah, when it's down and dirty and you're in a hard space, those are the ones that show up. That's what you're doing for your kid. It's easy to be there when she's having a good time.
But somebody to help you like integrate those experiences. And just a note, that's why I feel like even if your child is not in crisis, I think just having a counselor or a therapist is so beneficial because it shows your children that you can access the space in more than one way. That I don't have to be the only person that, you know, you can integrate your experiences with, that you can talk about your experiences with. That's why I think that's so important, because I'm glad that my child has that in me, but at the same time, I want her to have that in as many people as possible. And I teach her communication skills so that way that can be a friend. You know, you can talk to your friend, and she tells me conversations she's had at school. And I'm just like, I was not having those conversations, but she'll say, yeah, like this happened. And I told her how I felt about it and da, da, da. And I'm like teaching them, not just that they have that in me, but that they're also able to cultivate those spaces in the way that they just communicate about their needs and their feelings is really important to me.
Totally. That self-advocacy. Yeah. Man, I wish I had those skills as a kid.
Oh God. It's so the idea of I need that. I didn't have that language. And I'm like, it literally cuts through so much of the communication problems and of needs not getting met. And it's really the way that we practice articulating ourselves. I always come back to that when I'm seeing like the attitude, like rising up. I'm just like, hey, I'm here. Like, what are you feeling? What do you need? What do you need? Mm-hmm. I constantly come back to that again, because that's when we do the work in practice.
Yeah. Oh, I dig it. I dig it so much. I think that we can get so focused on that behavior. And you brought up a really good point at the beginning of like, when you're moving away from maybe punitive styles, or even if it's just a part of you from your childhood that like comes up and is like, oh, should I be like, the reality is we can get short-term results way faster with punishment or fear or even reward systems, right? We can get short-term results way faster. And someone in our village membership the other day was talking about short-term versus long-term goal. Sometimes living in that short-term goal of like, you know, I was talking about how my little guy was sick and all of a sudden, like the way we were navigating sleep was different, because usually I would put him down. He has a little sloth stuffed animal. He rolls around, plays with it, chats,
goes down to sleep. And then he was sick and stuffy and couldn't fall asleep and was having a hard time getting comfy. So I was holding him and helping him fall asleep and waiting till he was pretty asleep and then putting him down so that he could get into that sleep. And I was chatting about this in our membership, and we were talking about how, like, that's a short-term goal for me, right? Like, I am not my most regulated self when I'm spending 15 minutes putting him down for bedtime every time. Like, that for me doesn't work. And we have this other system in place when he's healthy. But when he's sick, I'm going back to my short-term goal. However, when he's not, we're looking at long-term goals, right? I'm looking at, like, what are we looking at down the road? What skills do I want them to have? And for me, I think so often when we're doing that punishment, fear, punitive, or reward system approach, we are losing things like that self-advocacy. We're losing that opportunity for them to say, I feel and I need, when we're just trying to get the behavior to stop.
Yeah, that's so, so true. That's so true. And honestly, we still come up in those moments, especially if you aren't regulating, you're tired, those moments where, like, you are like, I need the behavior to stop. Like, you feel that, like, I need her to stop yelling, or I need him to, like, just brush your teeth so we can go to bed because I've been up since 4 o'clock in the morning. I definitely still have those moments. And I think for me, it's about finding the best way to articulate that, but also just finding the best way to, like, lean into this is what it is. Like, last night when she was having that moment, I was so tired and I wanted to go to bed. And I was just like, she needs me. If I go in my room, she's not going to go to bed. Like, she's literally so dysregulated that she's not going to go to bed. And I was like, I mean, I could, like, scare her into going to bed. I could force her into going to bed, or I can just, all I have is a sit here. And I just literally was sitting. I was like, we're not leaving the room. We're not going to leave the room. We'll stay in this space. And I just sat on her door and I was just like, I'm here whenever you're ready. Like, I'm totally here. I hear everything that you're saying. And she, like, just laid on her bed, and I went and sat on her bed, and I was like, can I touch your foot? Like, just slowly going down that emotional ladder with her. She was slowly calming down. But in my mind, I was like, I'm tired as hell. But so I don't have a lot of energy to put into this, but I got enough energy to sit on this bed.
Like, yeah,
all I got right now is enough energy to sit on this bed. And I think that the more we resist in those moments, the harder it is for us to actually get past them. I feel like the minute I lean into, like, this is what my child is experiencing right now, and she needs my help. That's what it is. It's like, we don't need to fix the behavior. Or like your dad said, like, they know, she knows, she totally knows. So I don't need to fix this. This is obviously, she's having a hard time accessing what she knows.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. You could be the best 3-point shooter and have an off game.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And it doesn't matter how much I yell at you to, you know, sink it.
Yeah.
Something's up, and we're going to have to, we would be better trying to work that out in practice.
Totally.
Than trying to do it right now.
Totally. Yeah. And, you know, we recently in our membership, we have, like, guest Q&A sometimes. We had someone come on recently who's an occupational therapist, and she was sharing about like safety posture. And, you know, when we look in nature, and we see where, like, an animal is dysregulated, we'll see that cortisol pumping. They're like, they're in a fear fight place. And another animal comes up and, like, postures and gets big and gets scary. And then you just have this cortisol loop, right? Like, it's fear against fear. It's fight against fight. And that when we're in that space and we have our kids that are in that fear space, they're dysregulated, they're not in their whole brain, whether it's they're freezing, they're fleeing, they're fighting, whatever, they're in, especially in that fight space, though, I think we see this, that we then get big a lot of the time, right? Like, we're like, I'm going to overpower and control. It. Yep. Yeah. And that instead, really what makes that nervous system calm down is doing exactly what you did, where you're going to sit down. I'm going to be at their eye level. My shoulders are relaxing and opening up. My body's saying, I'm not a threat.
Yeah.
I'm not a threat to you. And in that, from the emotional side, we're saying, I can handle your hard stuff, right? Like, yeah. I'm not afraid of your big things. I'm here and can be here with you. And sometimes it's deflecting hits and kicks and stuff in the moment too, but really, like, signaling totally, but signaling, like, I'm a safe spot for you. And that's exactly what you did in it's sometimes for us, it's like, this is all the energy I have is to sit. But really, like, that can be enough.
Yeah. And I don't want to create the conflict, because like we said earlier, when we do those recaps, within the recap, they need to understand, and I'm still going to have you. I still got your back. We moved through the moment together. And so I don't want to do anything that contradicts that belief for her. Mm-hmm. I want to be reinforcing that belief that when you are in a storm, I'm going to be the safe harbor. And so anytime she's frustrated and I feel myself like about to power over, that's when I'm like, I tell my parents all the time, when they're, if you don't know what to do, then just don't do anything. Mm-hmm. Don't do anything until you get back into the rational part of your brain, you know, and just be that safety, because they do mirror us. They really do. They do mirror us. And every tool is not going to work in every moment. But I find that we have better access to those tools when we first just regulate and calm down. And
totally.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced, so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Totally. What roadblocks come up for you personally in this work? What are your biggest, I guess, or what's your biggest challenge in doing this? Even when you know all the things in the practical real life application?
I think for me, sometimes when my daughter is tantruming, like, and I've had this conversation recently, is that I wasn't allowed to have anger. Mm-hmm. And like, I wasn't allowed to have big emotions. They were either shut down or like shamed. And so sometimes when my daughter is having big emotions, I feel like my inner child is like, that's not fair. Like that's not fair. Or you're a kid, like kids are not allowed to have those kind of emotions. Like, you can be sad, you know, you can be upset, but like, you're pissed, like, no, you are not allowed to be pissed. And so it, even though I am very intentional about not projecting that, it still comes up.
Of course.
And so I have to do so much more regulation of myself when she's having those moments. And I really do have to like coach myself through those moments. Whereas like other times it just happens naturally. Her anger, me holding space for anger, does not happen as naturally as holding space for like her sadness or her frustration.
Totally. That makes sense. Is there any fear there societally of how she'll be perceived as a Black girl who's angry?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't want that perception. I can say that. I don't want that perception, but at the same time, the perception in itself is wrong. And everybody, yeah, everybody else is allowed to be mad. Yeah, so yeah, I'm allowed to be mad. My daughter that's going to grow up and be a Black woman, she's allowed to be mad. And in order for me to teach her effective ways to communicate that anger, I have to first hold space for the anger. Like she has to, I have to let her rage and roar in order to teach her how to dial it back, because I don't want it to scare her. I want her to be familiar with that feeling. And so I say that when we do our recap, and that's what the validation piece of it is, but I still have to model. Like,
totally.
While she's having her anger, I have to model, like, you know, and when we do our recaps, I think it's very important that I'm validating my feelings in those recaps as well. And so letting her know, because I want her to be able to see, like, yeah, I was angry during that. I was mad during that, you know, so she can see, okay, you can be angry and still, you know, regulate yourself and express that in an effective way. Because I don't want her to think that mommy is just like this calm person that never has feelings.
Totally.
I don't want her to think that, because I don't want her to grow up and be like, okay, there's something wrong with me, because mom doesn't get mad. Mom doesn't get pissed. Yes, mom does. But mom makes requests, need requests, or set boundaries or whatever. So that's definitely one of the most difficult things for me. Another one is like, and it happened yesterday too, is knowing when to back off a tool when it's not working. Because as effective as these respectful parenting tools can be, they can actually move into like a hurtful space if we try to push too much. Like, for instance, with my four-year-old, if I'm trying to validate her feelings and talk through it, like, I know you're mad, it pisses her off. Like, and she's like, stop saying, I know, you don't know, shut up. And so it's like, back off. But yesterday I was like rationalizing with my daughter, which is something that used to work so well. Like, I'd be like, well, look, this is for our responsibility. We're working as a team. Remember, I'm helping you get more responsible. Like, let's just work it out. And she was not responding. I just kept going on this conversation of trying to make it make sense for her, instead of like, she's literally not in the rational part of her brain, doesn't just,
she can't hear me.
Yeah. She cannot hear me. Exactly. I literally use that analogy all the time. Like, it doesn't matter how well you're articulating yourself. Somebody's in the next room, they can't hear you. And she was in the next room. And so I think that's also something that I struggle with having the being able to be outside of the situation and see it and being like, this is not effective destiny.
Totally. Yeah. I think that that's huge. And I think that so many of us fall into that where we're like, no, I'm going to bring these tools in and whatever. And yeah, sometimes we're just getting through the moment and
exactly. The
work's happening in repair and we're going to try something else again next time, or maybe even that same thing next time. But yeah, I hear that. It's interesting. I have a hard time holding space for anger with boys more than girls. I think like there's this part of me that's like, no, girls need to feel angry. We haven't been allowed to feel angry. And so you can feel all your anger. And with boys, I'm like, listen, there's so many more feelings other than anger. What you're showing is anger on the surface, but I want to know what's actually happening below the surface, right? Like, right. I have this like societal acceptance of anger in boys. And so for me, I'm like, it's almost like this part of me that's like, no, we're going to rewrite this ship. But it's like swinging the pendulum, right?
Right.
And I'm like really mindful of that, of like, nope, boys are also allowed to be angry. But that comes up for me where it's like the opposite, where girls can, but boys can't.
It's ironic though, because I don't get triggered like that when she's angry about anything except me. Like, when it's like, if she comes home and she's like, yeah, and she had the nerve to take my piece of popcorn, I'm like, what? Tell me. We're like, let's express this. But like, when it's like, mom, I hate you, you're the worst, I'm just like, ooh, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. It's so funny that, and that's probably some of my trauma as well coming up, where it's like, I grew up in a very like, not chaotic household, but our emotions were so extreme. When we were happy, it was like, ah, and when we were mad, it was like the same thing. And so it really goes from 0 to 100 internally. And I have to coach myself through that, which I'm glad I have that experience, because for the parents in my community that are still feeling very real things when they're parenting, I want them to know, like, you can regulate those things and you can get better with practice, you know?
Yeah, totally. And you're going to drop the ball. That's part of practicing.
Exactly.
What do you, just as my final question here, what do you think is often missing in the respectful parenting community, like discussion and tools and resources, blah, blah, blah. Like what's one piece of the puzzle that you wish was more talked about?
One piece of the puzzle, the respectful parenting puzzle that I wish was more talked about, definitely kind of what we've been talking about, which is what I think I bring to the space, is that it's difficult a lot. It's difficult a lot, and it's challenging in some way every single day. And I think that idea of whether or not it's working feels a lot heavier for us because we take so much of the intention and the responsibility. And so I think that that's definitely missing in this space, because there's this like, oh yeah, you're doing a good job, and there's grace, but I don't think that parents really understand that everybody in this space is having a hard time. Like it's not an easy thing. And I think that sometimes we think it's supposed to be easy just because we're teaching our kids these wonderful things that do help you become a whole healthy adult, but they're practicing.
Yeah, they're not there yet. And we're not there messy, yet.
Right. And we are practicing because a lot of us were not raised like this. And a lot of us literally spent a lot of our adult lives operating without boundaries, without empathy and compassion and all of the things that make up respectful parenting. And so if you have two beings that are literally in practice mode, yeah, like this is beta, okay? This is the beta version of our relationship. And so we're ironing out the kinks, and the fact that we're actually doing the work is why it's so hard.
Totally. And again, to bring it back to sports for a minute, because I've loved this practice analogy, this hits home for me. It would be outrageous to look at anyone that is an athlete and be like, yeah, 100% of the time they win every game, they hit every shot, they get every board, they whatever. Like, that's outrageous. You know, the Olympics are on right now, and like, there's not one Olympic athlete that 100% of the time nails all the things, you know? Yeah. And like, so I think like this idea that any of us are gonna 100% of the time, I have never in my life left a day with kids and been like, I was perfect today. I nailed it. Never. And I think like that as an expectation is bonkers, right? Like, it just is not. I think you do bring this to the space in such a beautiful way. And I think it's something that is really lacking. One thing that I feel like I struggle to share is how to share like my challenge without sharing my child's challenge. Like, it's something, I feel like you do it very well. It's something that like, when it comes to that, I just end up going quiet because I, in an effort to try and respect him, I don't know how to share it well. And I think that you do this really well. And I think that it is really important to be sharing, like, yeah, just like I said, that person DMs, it was like, that happens to you. It's like, yeah, that happens to all of us. That like all of us are having the kid throwing the tantrum on the sled on the way home, you know, and like carrying him in our arms and dragging a sled behind us. And in that moment, I'm not like, this is exactly how I want this to go. This is perfect. No, we're getting through that. And yeah, I think you do a really good job of sharing both the challenge and the like, and it's for something in the long run. Like, they are building skills, and it's going to be messy on the way there. It's going to be messy when you get there. Like, I have an adult relationship. Like, my partner and I have both been doing this work for a long time. We have beautiful communication, and often we'll drop the ball and we'll have to come back. And just the other day, he was like, you okay? And I hate that phrase, because what it really means is, I'm sensing something from you.
I'm sensing something, right?
And I just turned and snapped and said, is there another way you want to ask that? And but like, that's real. You know what I mean? And like, I think that you're absolutely right. I think the more we see people sharing the mess, the more it could normalize the mess.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, thank you, Destiny. Destiny, where can folks connect with you if they are somehow living under a rock, they're not following you yet? where can they find you?
On Instagram, it's Manifest Destiny, and that's DESTINI. I have an I at the end of my name. And then on TikTok, it is destiny.ann.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Voices of Your Village. Check out the transcript at voicesofyourvillage.com. Did you know that we have a special community over on Instagram hanging out every day with more free content? Come join us at seed.and.sow, S-E-W. Take a screenshot of you tuning in, share it on the gram, and tag seed.and.sow to let me know your key takeaway. If you're digging this podcast, make sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We love collaborating with you to raise emotionally intelligent humans.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone. Poof. Bye. See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of their life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking